ॐ गणाथमिदन्द शागणञ्जना श्लकया चक्षुर्मिलितां येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. So we mentioned this is the commemoration of the disappearance day of these two great personalities, Mahesh Pandit and Udharanadatta Thakur, both of whom are one of the 12 Gopals, those are the 12 primary associates of Lord Nityananda. So they are coward boys in Vrindavan. Mahesh Pandit is in Vrindavan is Shriman Mahaprabhu Mahabahu, and Udharanadatta Thakur is Subahu. And it's an interesting point about Udharanadatta Thakur is that Srila Prabhupada was born in the same family as Udharanadatta Thakur. It's very interesting. And as the Prabhupada explains in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's the Mulik family and the Seal family. And in the Mulik family, one of the branches is called the Day family. So that was the family that Srila Prabhupada was born in. So literally he's connected as a descendant of Udharanadatta Thakur, great devotee of Lord Nityananda. So now we will go and read from Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the sixth canto, fifth chapter, text 36, right? Yes. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sri Daksha Huvacha.
Sri Daksha Huvacha.
Aho.
Aho.
Asado.
Asado.
Sadhuna.
Sadhuna.
Sadhu.
Sadhu.
Lingena.
Lingena.
Nas.
Nas.
Vaya.
Vaya.
Asadhu.
Asadhu.
Akari.
Akari.
Arvakkanam. Vikshor
Marga
Apadarshitaha Sri Daksha Vacha Aho Sadhu Sadhu Naho
Sadhu Sadhu
Naho Sadhu Lingena Nastvaya
Sadhu Lingena Nastvaya
Asadvak Karyar Barkanam Vikshor Marga Pradarshitaha
Vikshor Marga Pradarshitaha
Sri Daksha Vacha
Aho
Sadhu Sadhu Naho
Aho Sadhu Sadhu Naho
Sadhu Lingena Nastvaya
Sadhu Lingena Nastvaya
Sadhvya Karya Parkana
Sadhvya Karya Parkana
Vikshor Marga Pradarshita
Vikshor Marga Pradarshita
Sri Daksha Vacha
Sri
Daksha Vacha Aho Sadhu Sadhu Nahom
Aho Sadhu Sadhu Nahom
Sadhu Lingena Nastvaya
Sadhu Lingena Nastvaya
Sadhvya Karya Barkanam Vikshor Marga Pradarshita
Sadhu Lingena Nastvaya. namasvaya.
Sadvakarya bhakanam.
Asadvakarya bhakanam.
Bhikshur marga pradarshitaha.
Bhikshur marga pradarshitaha.
Ladies.
Shidaksha vacha.
Sadunam
Sadulingenanasvaya
Sadhakarya Bhakanam
Bhikshamarga Pradarshita Shidaksha Vacha
Aho
Asadu Sadunam
Shri Daksha Vacha. Prajapati Daksha said, Aho Asadho.
Aho Asadho.
O greatly dishonest non devotee.
Sadhu
Nam. Of the Society of Devotees and Great Sages.
Sadhu
Lingena. Wearing the dress of a saintly person.
Wearing the dress of a saintly person.
Naha. Unto us.
Unto us.
Twaya.
Twaya.
By you.
By you.
Asadhu.
Asadhu.
A dishonesty.
A dishonesty.
Akari.
Akari.
Has been done.
Has been done.
Arvakanam.
Arvakanam.
Of poor boys who were very inexperienced. Bhikshaho
marga,
the path of a beggar,
or mendicant sannyasi.
Pradarshitaha, shown. Translation, Prajapati Daksha said, alas, Narada Muni, you wear the dress of a saintly person, but you are not actually a saint. Indeed, although I am now in grihastha life, I am a saintly person. By showing my sons the path of renunciation, you have done me an abominable injustice. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Sanyasira Alpa Chidra Sarva Loke Goy. That's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majalila, 12th chapter, text 51. In society, one will find many sannyasis, vanaprasas, grahasthas, and brahmacharis. But if all of them are properly live accordance with their duties, they are understood to be sadhus. Prajapati Daksha was certainly a sadhu because he had executed such great austerities that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, had appeared before him. Nevertheless, he had a fault-finding mentality. He improperly thought Narada Muni to be a sadhu, or non-saintly, because Narada had foiled his intentions. Desiring to train his sons to become grahasthas fully equipped with knowledge, Daksha had sent them to execute austerities by Narayana Saras. Narada Muni, however, taking advantage of their highly elevated position in austerity, instructed them to become Vaishnavas in the renounced order. This is the duty of Narada Muni and his followers. They must show everyone the path of renouncing this material world and returning home back to Godhead. Prajapati Daksha, however, could not see the exaltedness of the duties Narada Muni performed in relation to his sons. Unable to appreciate Narada Muni's behavior, Daksha accused Narada of being a sadhu. The words, Bhikshur Marga, the path of the renounced order, are very significant in this regard. A sannyasi is called Tridandi Bhikshu, because his duty is to beg alms from the homes of the grihasthas and to give the grihasthas spiritual instructions. A sannyasi is allowed to beg from door to door, but a grihastha cannot do so. Grihasthas may earn their living according to the four divisions of spiritual life. A brahmana grihastha may earn his livelihood by becoming a learned scholar and teaching people in general how to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He may also assume the duty of worship himself. Therefore, it is said that only brahmanas may engage in deity worship, and they may accept as prasad whatever people offer the deity. Although a brahmana may sometimes accept charity, it is not for his personal maintenance, but for the worship of the deity. Thus, a brahmana does not stock anything for his future use. Similarly, kshatriyas may collect taxes from the citizens, and they must also protect the citizens, enforce rules and regulations, and maintain law and order. Vaishyas should earn their livelihood through agriculture and cow protection, and shudras should maintain their livelihood by serving the three higher classes. Unless one becomes a brahmana, one cannot take sannyas. Sannyasis and brahmacharis may beg alms door to door, but a grihastha cannot. Prajapati Daksha condemned Narada Muni because Narada, a brahmachari, who could beg from door to door, had made sannyasas of Daksha's sons who were being trained to be grihasthas. Daksha was extremely angry at Narada because he thought that Narada had done him a great injustice. According to Daksha's opinion, Narada Muni had misled Daksha's inexperienced sons, Asadvakar Yaraganam. Daksha regarded his sons as innocent boys who had been misled when Narada showed them the renounced order of life. Because of all these considerations, Prajapati Daksha charged that Narada Muni was a sadhu and should not have adopted the dress of a sadhu. Sometimes a saintly person is misunderstood by grihasthas, especially when he instructs their young sons to accept Krishna consciousness. Generally, a grihastha thinks that unless one enters grihastha life, he cannot properly enter the renounced order. If a young man immediately adopts the path of the renounced order in accordance with the instructions of Narada or a member of his disciplic succession, his parents become very angry. The same phenomena is occurring in our Krishna consciousness movement because we are instructing all the young boys in the Western countries to follow the path of renunciation. We allow grihastha life, but a grihastha also follows the path of renunciation. Even a grihastha has to give up so many bad habits that his parents think his life has been practically destroyed. Phew. We allow no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, and no intoxication, and consequently the parents wonder how, if there are so many no's, one's life can be positive. In the Western countries especially, these four prohibited activities practically constitute the life and soul of the modern population. Therefore, parents sometimes dislike our movement, just as Prajapati Daksha disliked the activities of Narada and accused Narada of dishonesty. Nevertheless, although parents may be angry at us, we must perform our duty without hesitation, because we are in the disciplic succession from Narada Muni. People addicted to household life wonder how one can give up the enjoyment of grihastha life, which is a concession for sex enjoyment, simply to become a mendicant in Krishna consciousness. They do not know that the householder's concession for sex life cannot be regulated unless one accepts the life of a mendicant. The Vedic civilization therefore enjoins at the end of one's 50th year, one must give up household life. This is compulsory. However, because modern civilization is misled, householders want to remain in family life until death, and therefore they are suffering. In such cases, the disciples of Narada Muni advise all the members of the younger generation to join the Krishna consciousness movement immediately. There's nothing wrong in this. Wow. So, Sri Daksha Vacha Ho Asadu Sadhu Nam Sadhu Ngena Nastoya Asadvikar Yavarganam Bhikshur Marga Pradarshitaha. So, let's see. Omagana Timidandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur and Miditam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. So, one interesting thing happened to me recently in regard to one of my disciples. It very much reflects on this verse, is that this particular gentleman, he's over 50 years old, and somehow or other his wife left him. I mean, that's not important, why or how or whatever. And his wife left him, so I've been telling him, you know, now's the time to get completely immersed in Krishna consciousness. And he's from India. So Prabhupada is very much commenting on also people in the West, people from India. So his parents have been pressuring him to get remarried. He's over 50. And their logic was, first of all, who's going to cook for you? And I said, well, it's a lot cheaper to learn how to cook for yourself. I mean, if you get married just for someone to cook for you, that's an expensive cook. You know, if you hire a cook full time, it's cheaper. So we taught him how to cook, or he learned how to cook because he was cooking for the deities. And so he said to his mother, "I already know how to cook. I'm not going to starve to death." It's like someone would starve to death because they don't know how to cook. I mean, necessity is the mother of invention. I don't know if you ever heard that statement before. That if you have food there and nobody's cooking, you will learn how to cook. Nobody starves to death because there's food there and they don't know how to cook, right? It just doesn't happen. You may starve to death if there's no food. You know, huh? What am I supposed to do with this pot? You know, put it on my head? You know, whatever. So he explained to his parents, "I know how to cook." All right. And his parents said, "No, but then you have to get married. Who will take care of you in your old age? Who will love you in your old age?" And I was thinking, this is the opposite of Varnashram. That in Varnashram, you're supposed to become detached because the principle mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita in the 8th chapter is yam yam vapi smaran bhavam yashateyante kalevram. Tam tam evaiti kandiya siddhata bhava. Bhavata, what is it? Whatever one's thinking of at the time of death, that's where you go. You know, if you're thinking of your little deer like Bharat Maharaj, that's where you're going to go. You're going to become a deer. So it's a time for detachment from this world to actually, you know, there's a time for everything in life. You know, there's a time to go to school. There's a time for education. There's a time for economic development. And there's a time for renunciation. That's Varnashram, or at least the ashrams. Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. So I was explaining that to him. Still, his parents are putting on pressure, so who knows what's going to happen. I'm praying for him every day. You know, he says, "Well, I'm not going to get married without your permission, Guru Maharaj." But, you know, sometimes people are so determined to do something, you have to give permission. People think, "Oh, if you're a guru, your disciples listen to you? Well, welcome to the real world." You know, like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, he said, "I have 4 disciples, 2 arms and 2 legs, and that's it. And nobody else listens." Except for Prabhupada. Prabhupada was the one to listen as far as preaching in the Western world. So, let's see what happens with this particular individual. So that's one point here. Of course, in this particular story, you have 2 groups of children. Actually, Daksha was able to have a lot of children. He had 10,000 one time. That's called the Hariyashvas. And the second group was 1,000, so that's quite a bit of children. And Daksha actually had as his responsibility to create progeny to fill the universe. I mean, it's an important responsibility. It wasn't that Daksha was engaged in some nonsense activity. It's interesting. There's this philosophy in science, here's a little science for you, called panspermia. And I'll explain what it is. One of the original discoverers of DNA You know what DNA is? DNA. You know, the genetic material that determines your, you know, what you're going to look like, whether you're going to join the Hare Krishna movement or not. So, you have a little Hare Krishna's on your DNA strand. So, one of the followers, his name was Crick. And he found that there was no way that life came about by chance. It's interesting. He actually said this. Of course, his theory wasn't that, you know, God came down or whatever. But his theory was that people from other planets came and they planted the genetic material. That's also our philosophy, because Daksha is not from the Earth planet. You know, so aliens, you know. We even have our alien philosophy. So Daksha is not from the Earth planet. And he, with his children, you know, they had all sorts of different species of life, and also Kashyapa and Kardama Muni. You know, you have all these different Prajapatis. And they did all these things. So that's called, technically, that's called panspermia. They put the genetic material or they arrange. And of course, you have Manu, who is the father of mankind. Very interesting. So Lord Brahma had that duty to arrange, because he got the intelligence from Krishna, from within the heart, and he got that duty to arrange to fill the universe and create the universe and do all that other stuff. And he was trying to engage his sons in doing that. And not only Daksha, sometimes his sons refused to follow his order, like in the case of the Chatushna, the four Kumaras, right? He told the four Kumaras, Jai, Shishi Panchatattva, Panchatattva Ki Jai. He told the four Kumaras, you should get married and be Prajapatis too. And guess what? They said, no, Dad. Now, you have to understand that in Indian culture, you don't say no to your father. It's like nowadays, you know, in America or here in Slovenia, your father says, don't join the Hare Krishna movement. You say, no, Dad, you know, just cool it. Isn't it? I mean, but in Indian culture, which is originally, I guess, from Lord Brahma and the demigods and Krishna. Anyway, so Lord Brahma told the four Kumaras, this is actually similar to the story of Daksha. He told the four Kumaras, get married and propagate the different races. And actually some of the Prajapatis had non-human children, like you have Kadru and Vinata with the snakes and birds. So the four Kumaras said, no, Dad. And Lord Brahma got so angry with them that Lord Shiva popped out from his forehead. That's one of the Rudra incarnations came out. You know, the 11 Rudras, they threatened to destroy the universe. Anyway, it's a story of the Bhagavatam. So he got angry, but he didn't curse the four Kumaras. So it was a bona fide service. You know, some people have it that service. I mean, how else are Vaishnavas going to be born? If you say that everyone should take sannyas, then how will Vaishnavas appear in this world? And, you know, one time Prabhupada was asked, what if everyone takes sannyas? Or everyone becomes renounced and no one gets married? And Prabhupada said, that will never happen. You know, it's not something you worry about. It's like saying, what if everyone stops eating? Stops eating prasad. You know, it's a stupid question because it'll never happen. So so the married life, the grahastha life is important because one can have Krishna-conscious children, one could even give birth like Bhakti Vinod Thakur and his wife Bhagavati gave birth to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bhakti Vinod Thakur was praying for a ray of Vishnu to appear. And actually it was similar to Advaitacharya, isn't it? Advaitacharya was praying for Vishnu himself to come down. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur was praying for a ray of Vishnu, and he had Bimal Prasad, who later on became Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So it's a bona fide service. There's no criticism of it. I'm not going to be like the old time sannyasis criticizing the grihasthas for getting married. So, anyway, so Daksha was engaged in a bona fide service. However, why did he get angry? And he was a great devotee of the Lord, too, as mentioned here in the purport. And previously we heard how Daksha saw, he performed austerities, and Narayan, Vishnu, came right before him. I mean, this is not an ordinary, run-of-the-mill married person. I mean, I don't know how many married people have Vishnu come before them when they're planning to do their service. And Vishnu said, I'm going to empower you and give you intelligence and how to do it. So why was Daksha getting angry like that at Narada Muni? If he was, practically speaking, a very elevated devotee, I'm not saying pure devotee. The reason is that he had an anartha. And how could he have an anartha? Well, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, if you're familiar with the Madhurya Kadambini, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, one of the sources, or one source of anarthas, is the byproducts of bhakti. You know, he gives four sources. Sinful activities is one. Obviously, that's a source of anarthas. Like if you start eating meat and taking intoxication, that's not going to be helpful to your devotional service. Then pious activities, thinking yourself the doer and the benefactor of others, and being immersed in the mode of goodness, which Krishna says in the Gita conditions one to the sense of happiness. And then, of course, offenses. That's a big one. I think that's probably the biggest problem of all of us, is we commit offenses against Vaishnavas. And therefore, we don't have a taste for chanting. And then the final one is the byproducts of bhakti. Byproducts of bhakti means, basically, you get proud of your knowledge, proud of your, you know, the way you lead kirtan or whatever, proud of your service, proud that you're the boss, you're at big GBC or something. There's not temple presence, they never get proud. So you get proud of these things, and because of pride, you commit offenses against others. This is a real big one that I've experienced. Because we have so much knowledge, Krishna gives us ability to do different things, and then we just offend others. If you think, I'm an advanced devotee, you know, Janmai Sharya Shudasya Shibir, Edavanam, Adapuman. Of course, Queen Kunti prays not so much about Vaishnavas, but that people become proud because of their good birth, good family, their opulence, money. That's another thing. Now, that's another thing that's a byproduct of bhakti, that one performs devotional service and, you know, somehow or other, money or opulence comes. And then followers come, you know, like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, what the nadanam, najanam, the sundari. Followers, attractive people, wealth comes, and someone gets bewildered. So one has to be very careful about these anarthas, that particular anartha, because it seems to be bhakti. You know, I'm advanced in devotional service. Krishna's given me this position. And it seems to be bhakti, but it's not bhakti. It masquerades as bhakti. So this is what's happening with Daksha. The Daksha is actually thinking like this. And many of the statements he makes are not particularly wrong, but they're spoken in the wrong context. For example, it's not wrong to be a grihastha. And it is wrong, as Daksha says, to encourage people who are young prematurely to take up renunciation. That is wrong. Because what happens when you encourage people prematurely to take up renunciation We're not just talking about young people. We're talking about people who are not realized in Krishna consciousness, because renunciation is very difficult, especially in this age of Kali. The prohibition is there against sannyas. And the only reason for sannyas is for preaching Krishna consciousness, not to become a better devotee. I can tell you, you know, when I took sannyas, it didn't make me a better devotee. It just made me prouder. It made me want to eat more Mahaprasadam. So, because in those days you took sannyas, not now. In those days you took sannyas, you get all the deity plates right after the deities were offered. It's like you had six offerings a day. Pretty good, isn't it? You hear the conch shell. The conch shell being blown means prasadam is coming. And all those sweets, you get them big maha plates. Wow. So, if one... I'm not saying I took sannyas prematurely. I took it at the right time. But if one is encouraged in renunciation prematurely, it won't last. Because the word sannyas doesn't mean simply renunciation. It's composed of two syllables or three syllables. Sannyas. Actually, two syllables. That means acceptance and renunciation. Which means, just translating that into a verse in Bhagavad Gita, Rasa Varjam Rasa Pyasa Panam Jashrani Vartate. One has to have a higher taste. One has to be disinterested. Nirapeksha. One has to be able to focus his mind on Krishna and become attached to Krishna, just like we hear in the Bhagavad Gita. Was that Jayato Vishak Pum Sam Sangostesha Pajayate? Right? From contemplating something, you begin attached to it. I'll give you a practical example of my own life about that. Okay. Confessions, true confessions. All right, anyway. So recently, I was flying in an airplane, and I read about, this is a place in America called Disney World. Anyone's heard of that before? No, you haven't heard. You're innocent, young man. You should take sannyas. So I read that they just established a exhibit, whole world, like based on Star Wars. You know what Star Wars is? No. He doesn't know anything. Anyway. So, and I was thinking, when I read it, I was thinking, why can't I go? And I started to meditate on it. You know, that's my Maya, whatever we're going to say. At least it's not anything to do with breaking the regulated principles. So, because I was a big fan of Star Wars. Anyway, so I read it and it had all these things, Darth Vader and everything like that there. And the more I read about it, the more I think, why can't I go? You know, what is this? How can I go? You know, I was planning my mind how to go. And, you know, because I was contemplating it. And the attachment was developing more and more. Yes, I should go. I'll get one of my disciples to sponsor and go with me. And we'll say that we're actually learning about how to propagate Krishna consciousness. You know, so excuses were coming into mind too. And then Krishna sort of in my ear said, you nonsense. I said, what was that? Let me plug my ears up so I don't hear that. Anyway. So Krishna said, you nonsense. And I said, yeah, you're right. And so immediately, I stopped contemplating it, and the desire went away. That's pretty cool, isn't it? That if you don't contemplate something, you know, thinking, feeling, willing, right? If you contemplate something, you get attached to it, you get attached, you get lusty, you get lusty, you get angry. And, you know, the rest of the procedure happens according to the Bhagavad Gita. So it was interesting. Now I don't even think about it, the desire's not. But if I start contemplating it, the desire will be there. Interesting. So it's a question of refocusing. So to be a sannyasi, one has to be able to refocus the mind on Krishna. And as Prabhupada said, one has to be a Brahmin. So it has to be refocusing the mind on Krishna in such a way that it's Brahminical. In other words, preaching, studying, writing, explaining things to people, teaching, like that. These are all brahminical activities. One has to be inclined towards those brahminical activities to be a sannyasi. There's nothing wrong with being a kshatriya or a vaishya or a shudra. I mean, if one feels an inclination towards managing, fine. Or towards banking and commerce or cow protection, fine. Or towards artistic things, fine, but don't take sannyas. And so, anyway, so that's the quality of a sannyasi. And if someone, and so Daksha was absolutely right. If now one isn't mature, arvakanam, as the statement is, they're not able to reason things out. Actually, that's the literal translation of that word in the purport, in the verse. Then, at that point, you know, this encouraged them. Like Prabhupada gave the example, referring to the story in the 8th canto about Gajendra the elephant. Gajendra the elephant was not ready to be a sannyasi, anyway. No, was not ready to fight in the water. And he was fighting the crocodile. You all know that story? I think most of you know that story. He's fighting the crocodile in the water. And the crocodile was winning. And Prabhupada used that story to illustrate the point that someone should be situated in their natural ashram to be able to continue Krishna consciousness year after year in a steady pace. Like we talk about the race between the tortoise and the rabbit. You know, the tortoise won because he was steady. So that is the point. The people should be in their natural psychophysical condition so they can execute Krishna consciousness throughout their whole lives and serve Lord Chaitanya's mission enthusiastically. Okay? Everyone's different. And so Daksha was half right, but he was applying it in the wrong situation because his sons were actually qualified to take sannyas because they were executing austerities. And Narada Muni ascertained that. Later on, you're going to read in this chapter that Daksha decided not to have any more children that Narada Muni could trick, and therefore he had some daughters. Because no sannyasinis. So, any questions or comments about any of these points? Questions or comments? Everyone should be situated so they can continue Krishna consciousness year after year. The thing that is painful to me and was painful to Prabhupada when people left Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, Hare Krishna. Prabhupada said that Lord Chaitanya, he was nirapeksha, disinterested in this world. But Prabhupada said he was interested in this world and he was getting disciples married, performing the marriages. You know, traditionally a sannyasi is prohibited from performing marriages. Traditionally, if you're getting married and you see a sannyasi, it's not considered auspicious. Like you're on your way to the marriage and some sannyasi walks by and says, oh my God, this marriage is going to be problematic. You know, it's one of these, you know, Vedic signs, like you see a rabbit crossing the road on this side, or a rabbit crossing the road on that side, means something different. All these signs. So it seems a sannyasi. So traditionally it's like that. Of course, that's not referring to Vaishnava sannyasis. But Prabhupada arranged and performed marriages because he wanted his disciples to be able to continue serving enthusiastically their whole lives. And that's the point, to maximize the Krishna consciousness. Simply taking sannyas is a disturbance if it minimizes Krishna consciousness. One just becomes a lazy Mahaprasadam-eating bum. That's useless. All right, so anyway, you have a question?
Yes. In the purport, Prabhupada says that the duty of
is to encourage renunciation.
And renunciation.
Yeah.
So my question is, how to still apply this information that's coming from Shastra, even though I know that that's not right now for me.
Okay. Yes, you're wearing white. So, let's just talk about what renunciation means. One of the first two surrendering principles of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Does anyone know? Sharanagati?
Accept,
favor, reject. Yeah, to accept what's favorable, reject what's unfavorable. That's what renunciation is. That even though, I mean, for example, I have to do things that are not traditionally the duties. You know, I'm managing, oh my God, don't remind me. So I have to be at GBC, go to GBC meetings, and it's not really like ecstasy. You know, I go to the meeting and, oh my God, I get to manage. Ecstasy. No, but it's what Krishna wants. So that's part of my renunciation, is doing things that are not traditionally the duty of a sannyasi. Wow. You know, managing, dealing with money. And traditionally, the grahasthas were the ones who initiated and had disciples, because they could maintain an ashram. I mean, once in a while, you have Narada Muni, of course, he had an ashram in Narada Kund in Govardhan. But traditionally, it's like that. So Prabhupada's renunciation was to do things that were prohibited for a sannyasi, like crossing an ocean, dealing with money. You know, Prabhupada even taught the first ladies how to wear saris. Can you imagine a sannyasi? I didn't even know how to wear a sari. Someone will have to show me. In case I happen to be a gopi or something like that. Get back to the spiritual world and say, I don't know how to deal with this. Anyway. So Prabhupada had to do things, can you imagine? And his godbrothers criticized him for that. In so many ways. Not his godbrothers, so many people criticized him. You know, what kind of sannyasi is that? Prabhupada said, even Prabhupada was using a microphone or a tape recorder, you know, Yukta Vairagya. And people criticize, but a sannyasi means real sannyas, sannyas, accepting, rejecting, accepting everything favorable. So a grahastha can actually be a sannyasi in essence, not in name, but in essence, because he's accepting the married order of life to serve Krishna. And that's what's favorable for him. What's favorable for you may not be the same thing that's favorable for me. It's different. Everybody's different. One man's food is another one man's poison. So that's renunciation. I accept things, whatever way I can maximize my service for Srila Prabhupada. You know, I would love just to sit down and go over down and chant the holy names and say goodbye, cruel world. It's a cruel world, I tell you that. Just like we had one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, Krishnadas Babaji, he was a Babaji. And he was authorized to do that. And so whenever we asked him a question, he would just laugh at us and chant Hare Krishna. I'd like to do that too, you know. So. Like Ananta says, you know, comes up with some management thing and he says, you know, and I just go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Bol, Gauranga. I mean, that would be ecstatic. Yeah. But my renunciation is that I can't do that. I have to accept what's favorable. How do I know what's favorable? To maximize the service for Srila Prabhupada's mission. That's what's favorable. That's my standard. And so, grahastha, you remain stable and you serve Krishna your whole life. You know, very nice. I think it's very nice. And you have nice Krishna conscious children, and you give nice donations to the sannyasis like me. That anyway, it's an advertisement. So it's like Prabhupada said, that sannyasis go to the Raja's house and they beg. It's bhikshu. Actually, originally, this particular top cloth was meant for begging. Because the reason it's so big is that not so he could have a lot of money in it. The reason it's so big is because people would put grains and fruits and everything like that in it. It's not that they would throw gold into it. Nowadays, of course, the sannyasis just have to travel around with a credit card reader. They don't need this anymore. I think I'm joking, but it's not a joke. It's true. So that's why it's called bhikshu. Tridandi bhikshu. Tridandi means the three sticks, body, mind, and words, and actually there's a fourth one too. Really, it's Chaturdandi, which means the soul dedicated, body, mind, and words to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in this way, the ladies can be sannyasis. And then everybody can be a sannyasi, to really, in essence. Krishna says in the Gita, sannyasi is not one who does no work, nor lights no fire, or whatever. So that's why we encourage everyone in renunciation. Get married? Yes. Be renounced. Follow the four regulated principles. It's not just like you drive off in your car with the tin can. I don't know if you have that here. The tin cans behind the car. Did you ever do that? You know. In America, someone gets married, you know, and they have these tin cans connected to the car, and they drive off into the sunset, and they go off on their honeymoon to, let's see, what's a good place in Europe to go to? Italy. When? Where? Venice. Oh, yeah, Venice. They go on a gondola, which happens to be in the sewer system of Venice. You know, there's such a romantic thing. Oh, the sewerage is... You're not supposed to go swimming in the canals because you could die immediately. Did you know that? The signs say, no, don't go swimming. And so they go, and the gondolier is singing, oh, solo mio. You're mine, you know, basically. You're only mine. You know, solo means only mio, mine. So, anyway, someone's singing the song right now. So it's not that, that's not a grihastha life, you know, you go down to Italy, the gondolas, you know. But you know, you can go on pilgrimage to all the holy places for your honeymoon, that's fine. Where did you go on your honeymoon? Well, we went to Sri Rangam, Kanchipuram, Vrindavan, Mayapur. You didn't do anything fun, no. That is fun, serving Krishna. So that's renunciation, isn't it? Dedicating manasa deha gaya yokishamori arpilam tuya pari nandakishori bhakti kandakur. He was most renounced. He's called the seventh Goswami. As Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Do you know that? Seventh Goswami. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if he was convinced he could have Krishna conscious children, he'd be prepared to get married and have sex life 1,000 times. So that's a great austerity, having Krishna conscious children. I mean, it's austerity taking care of children, isn't it? I mean, some of you who are not married may think, oh, they're just cute and they smile all the time. Not really. At night they get up. Can you imagine at night being woken up in the middle of the night? Isn't it? Don't they do that? I don't know personally, I mean, but they do that. I mean, I'm on an airplane sometimes and the kid is screaming. I said, oh, boy, that demon, you know. No, don't say that. I just shut him up. So it's an austerity. I think it's more austere than being a sannyasi. Sannyasi is easy. I just come places, people feed me. You know, you get whatever I want. You know, just like devotees ask me, where'd you get this nice hat? I said, I don't know. People give me thousands of hats. I don't know where it came from. I didn't buy it. So it's more austere. It's more austere to be a good grihastha, isn't it? And so that's renunciation. Okay, any other questions? Yes.
I'd like to ask you, about the livelihood of brahmanas. From the purpose, I could understand that brahmanas can only live in the temple and teach out.
Brahmanas can live in the temple, live austerely, yes. Yajan, yajan, patan, patan, dana pratigraha, yeah. The Brahmin's livelihood is teaching, studying, teaching, performing sacrifice, learning how to do sacrifice, giving in charity, and accepting charity. That's Brahma. Of course, it's Kali Yuga, so sometimes people who are Brahminical have to do other things to maintain their family. This is life. You know, it's not. You know, technically, in traditional society, that would be considered shudra occupation, where you go begging for a job. Prabhupada talked about that. But because we are actually trying to be Vaishnavas, then grihastha basically can do something without over-endeavoring, so keeps his good sadhana, can still serve the mission. Depends on his inclination. I mean, some grihasthas live in the temple their whole lives. And with their families there, and they just serve the deities full time, which is nice. And others live outside, and they give the fruits of their work, money, to the temple, and that's nice too. You know, when Krishna says yat karosi yat asnasi yat jyohoshi tadasi yat, whatever you offer, whatever you give away, should be done as an offering to me. So one can serve Krishna with, the Prabhupada said one can serve Krishna with one's life, with one's money, with one's intelligence. There's different ways of serving Krishna. So I think to be practical in this day and age, you know, grihastha has to do something honest tonight to earn his living. That's all I can say. Previously, yes, there was more facility for grihastha. You could live simply. In India, it didn't get cold. You didn't have to pay heating bills. You know, you could live with just like a simple dhoti, you didn't need coats. So grihastha didn't need that much. He could, there's so much vegetables around. But today, you know, you're dealing with a money-centered economy. It wasn't a barter exchange economy. So I think you can't apply the rigid standards or restrictions that were there originally for grihasthas. Just do something honest. Something honest. So, does that answer your question? And if you could serve Krishna full time, go on Sankirtan to, you know, support yourself by distributing Prabhupada's books, phew, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Yeah.
You mentioned contemplation, but usually, at least for me, it's not so. Many times it doesn't seem to be completely in my power to start contemplating, or that is the opposite effect. If I try, then the mind is really start pushing with this contemplation goal. You can give some advice how you.
Well, you have to contemplate on something else. Okay. Yeah. What you're saying is absolutely true. As I mentioned yesterday, you can't do a don't, so you have to contemplate on something positive. You know, what would please Krishna, or something that you'd like to do for Krishna. You know, it's not that when I was giving up that contemplation, I mean, I'll give another example of contemplation in my own life. At one point, I was very addicted to eating certain foods that were not so healthy for me. I mean, prasadam. I was killing myself with prasadam. So, anyway, things that were too fatty, too sweet, all that other nice stuff. And then Instead, I started to think, you know, of health. You know, I changed my consciousness. Instead of focusing on the tongue, I focused on the health and serving Krishna. And so because of that positive thing, I didn't have to think about giving up what wasn't good for me. So that's really the methodology, that you just think of something really positive, like Krishna's pastimes, you can't think of Krishna's pastimes, some service. I mean, somehow or other absorb your mind in something that excites you for Krishna. I mean, I gave the example yesterday that recently I've been very much immersed in trying to prove to people, and hopefully I can do this for the Sunday feast, that life comes from life, which is actually one of Prabhupada's main objectives, to prove that to people. That life doesn't come from a chance combination of matter. So in order to do that, I'm studying science more. I mean, I was a scientist before I joined the movement. That's my natural propensity. And so my mind is absorbed in that. It's a service for Krishna, doing something Prabhupada wanted. And then I forget about everything else while I'm doing it. It's really interesting that when you're really focused on something you like to do for Krishna, and Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita was told by Krishna that unless you focus on something that you like to do, you're going to be forced to do in any way. It's a dharmic, because your mind will wander. So that's my feeling. If I focus on something I'd like to do for Krishna, then everything else is just, you know, just like, it's like some static, you know, it doesn't really bother me. So figure out what you like to do. Be excited about waking up every day and doing it. And then it'll be easy just to refocus your mind. Okay? So, I think we like to eat prasadam, because it's art. Of course, I have to like to offer to the deities. So, all glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, and let's see, Mishra. Oops. Punch a tadva. Nice devotees, the servants of Panchatattva.